ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So I'd like to welcome everyone to the temple today for the celebration of Sri Balaram Jayanti, the birth ceremony or the appearance ceremony for Lord Sri Balaram. We're very fortunate that we have Krishna and Balaram standing on our altar here and that we can worship them on a day like today. Actually, Balaram Jayanti raises an interesting question. And that question is, will we be able to keep the temple room quiet enough during the Bhagavatam class this morning? Now, actually, Balaram Jayanti does raise an interesting question. And that question is, how is it that God has a birthday? How is it that God has a birthday? I thought God was unlimited, beginningless, endless, all these things. How then can we conceive of God, Lord Sri Balaramji, as having a birthday? So that's going to be the subject of our discussion today. But there is a simple answer that I'll give you right now, and that Sri Balaramji has a birthday for the same reason that all of us have birthdays. I mean, think about it. Outside the 18th birthday and a 21st birthday, maybe the 65th birthday, what is the purpose of all the other birthdays? They don't really mean anything. When you come 18, you can vote. When you come 21, you can drink. When you come 65, you can retire. But all the rest of the birthdays do have a significance because they offer us the opportunity to say, I love you. Just like yesterday was Babu's birthday. And so, if you saw on Facebook, I don't know, he's my friend on Facebook, and so I said, you know, happy birthday. I was saying, dude, I love you, you know. It's your birthday. That's what a birthday's for. Otherwise, what's the point? Although I think you were saying it's your 65th or something. Not yet, okay. So that's what birthdays are for in the material world. And that's what birthdays are for when we speak about the transcendental personalities like Lord Sri Balaram. We're here to say to Balaram that I love you. And we're doing that in different ways. We're holding a festival. We're doing the swing festival. We're cooking a feast for him. People do different types of special austerities or pujas on this day. For what? For what? To say to Lord Balaram that I love you. And I appreciate all that you do and you are and that you mean for me. And so that's the purpose of our celebration today. But to be able to really do that, to say that to Lord Balaram, just like to say it to anybody, we really have to know them first. We have to know who the person is. So that when they hear we say that we love you, that then it has some meaning to them. I mean, if I go up to anybody whose birthday is today on the street there and I tell them, I love you, man, then they're going to probably think I'm crazy or something like that because I don't know them. And so the purpose of these days, these special days, appearance days of the Lord and his great devotees, are for us to know them. And to know them, we have to know all about them. We have to know all about all aspects of them. And then it has much more meaning when we say that we love them. And so that's the subject matter we're going to explore today And we're going to begin by reciting a verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is in the 8th chapter, and it describes the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram. And so you know the history, most of you I'm sure are familiar, that Krishna, his birth had to be a little hidden because of the persecutions of Kamsa. And so the birth naming ceremony usually takes place right after birth, but it didn't take place like that for Krishna and Balaram because they had to be hidden a little bit from the atrocities of King Kamsa. So sometime later, Garga Muni came to Vrindavan, and in a cow shed, they had the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram. And so this is the verse that Garga Muni spoke in terms of Lord Balaram. Sri Garga Uvacha, Ayam hi Rohini Putro, Ramayan Suhrido Ganai, Akshasyate Rama Iti, Faladikad Balavidu, Yarunam Apritag Bhavat, Sankarshanam Ushant Yapi. Sri Garga Uchu, Garga Muni said, I am this, he indeed, Rohini Putra, the son of Rohini, Ramayan, pleasing, Suhrida, all his friends and relatives, Gunai, by transcendental qualities, Akyasyate, will be called Rama, by the name Rama, the supreme enjoyer, Iti, in this way, Bala Adikya Adhikat, because of extraordinary strength, Balam Vidu will be known as Balaram, Yarunam of the Yaru dynasty, Apritak Bhavat, because of not being separated from you, Shankarshanam, by the name Sankarshan, or uniting two families, Uchanti attracts Api also. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Garga Muni said, this child, the son of Rohini, will give all happiness to his relatives and friends by his transcendental qualities. Therefore, he will be known as Rama. And because he will manifest extraordinary bodily strength, he will also be known as Bala. Moreover, because he unites two families, Vasudev's family and the family of Nanda Maharaj, he will be known as Sankarshan. Purport. Baladev was actually the son of Devaki, but he was transferred from Devaki's womb to that of Rohini. This fact was not disclosed. According to a statement in the Harivamsa, Pratyucha Itato Rama Sarvams Tan Abhitat Statan Yadvesha Api Sarveshu Bhavanto Mama Vallabha. Garga Muni did disclose to Nanda Maharaj that Balaram would be known as Sankarshan because of uniting two families, the Yadu Vamsa and the Vamsa of Nanda Maharaj, one of which was known as Kshatriya and the other as Vaishya. Both families had the same original forefather, the only difference being that Nanda Maharaj was born of a Vaishya wife, whereas Vasudev was born of a Kshatriya wife. Later, Nanda Maharaj married a Vaishya wife and Vasudev married a Kshatriya wife. So although the families of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev both came from the same father, they were divided as Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Now Baladev united them and therefore he was known as Sankarshan. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, as I was mentioning, how to know a person? How to know a person? If we're going to love someone, then we have to know all about them. We have to know all aspects of their personality. Otherwise, we may get a chance impression, a partial view of someone that really prohibits us from having the chance to love them. And I want to begin by telling you a story from my own life by which I got to know someone and how that made such a big difference in how I was able to know that person and appreciate that person. When I was just beginning my legal career, I was in Washington, D.C., and I was asked by my mentor, who was in Los Angeles, I was asked by him to make an appearance in federal court for him. He was taking a case in federal court in Washington, D.C., but he was in California. He couldn't come, and so he called me and asked me to go and make an important appearance for him in that case. So I was a young, enthusiastic attorney and quite anxious to show my stuff, and so I went down to the federal court building, just in the shadow of the U.S. Capitol building on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. I don't know how many of you have ever been in a federal courtroom. Has anybody been in a federal courtroom here? Okay. Federal courtrooms are very lavish in their construction. A lot of marble, a lot of mahogany. It adds a degree of awe to the place. And so this is my first court appearance. And I was going down the federal court, and I walked in that court, and I thought, wow, this place is something. And I looked at the bench. Looked like it was like 30 feet high up there where the judge was going to be sitting. But I was ready. No problem. I was ready. So when the case was called, the government was on the other side. They presented first, and then the judge called for our side. So I strode up to the podium and I said, Your Honor, we. And as soon as I said we, he cut me off. I thought I was prepared for all questions, but as soon as I said we, he cut me off. And he looked down at me from that 30-foot height and he said, Who is we? Who is we? My mind went completely blank. Who is we? Then he said again, Who is your client? I had no clue. I was looking around, getting nervous. That place got so quiet, I could hear all people turning to look at me. I felt so small. I felt like I was just sinking into the floor. There was a hole in my heart. And the majesty of that surrounding in federal court just overwhelmed me. And I just stood there with my mouth open. And finally, my client, he came up and he whispered in my ear, Okay, Your Honor, we are Vietnam Veterans Association. So I was so much in awe in that situation that I had a view of that judge that lasted in my mind for months. I thought, this person has to be the cruelest person on earth. He's going to humiliate me in court like that. But I should have known. It was my own fault. But anyway, I had that impression of him. But some months later, the Bar Association organized a luncheon. And so I went to that luncheon. And, you know, these luncheons are affairs where you can sort of hobnob with people, get to know them and everything like that. And who was there across the room but that judge? And so somehow or another, I got the strength up to go and talk to him and introduce myself to him. Of course, he didn't remember anything about the incident that was burned in my consciousness, but he actually turned out to be a pretty nice guy. And we had a nice talk there, and he even helped me later, you know, in my career. He offered to be kind of like a mentor like that. And so that experience gave me a whole different impression of the same person. The first person was untouchable, great awe, but the other person was somebody I could relate to and interact with on a very personal basis. I got to know that judge personally. And therefore, I got a complete view of him. Now, I don't know that I would send him a birthday card that says I love you on it, but at least I know that he respects me and I respect him. This is the degree to which we need to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram. We need to know two aspects, at least two aspects of the Lord. We need to know the Siddhanta, or the truth, the existential truth of the Lord's position. But we also need to know the Leela, or the pastimes, or the personality of the Supreme Lord. Because if we don't know both of these aspects of the Lord, then we're not going to really be able to say wholeheartedly that I love you. And so, how do we get to know these two aspects of the Lord, Siddhanta and Leela? This is the purpose of these days, these holy days, where we take time from our busy schedule, take the time to know the Supreme Lord by hearing about him, reading the Shastras, discussing his pastimes. In these ways, we become familiar with the Supreme Lord. Specifically, in relation to Lord Balaram, it's particularly important that we know Lord Balaram, because there's no one more close to Krishna than Balaram. There's no one more close to Krishna than Balaram. Indeed, the Guru, he's Adi Guru. Lord Balaram's Adi Guru. He's our first Guru. He's the first Guru. Everyone else that gets knowledge of Krishna through Guru gets that through Lord Balaram. And so it's particularly important that we know him, that we know the Siddhanta of Balaramji, as well as the Leela of Balaramji. These two things we must understand. So in preparing this class, I thought, well, let me try to find out something about Lord Balaram. I know that Lord Balaram is Krishna's first expansion. So I thought, well, let me go to the most sought-after source today about information, and that is a Google search. So I did a Google search. I'm not making this up. You can do it too. I did a Google search, and it said, I searched, why does Krishna expand? And I got a very deep answer, response on that question. And I want to read it to you, just so you know that I'm telling you the truth. I Googled that, and I got this question that I can't believe I don't have here. I don't have it here. Anyway, I'll tell you what the question was. Somebody on there had written, why does Krishna expand? I know that he expands to Balaram, Baladev as the first expansion, and then Baladev expands as the Chaturvyuha, Sankarshan, Anirudha, Parjumyan, and Vasudev, and that they expand again. And then from that second expansion, Mahavishnu comes and this material world is created. I know all that. But my question is, why does Krishna expand? He can do it himself. He's all powerful. So why does he expand? This was the question right there on the internet there. This man was asking that. And he says, I went to this person, that person, and no one could give me an answer to this question. Why does Krishna expand? But there's a reason why Krishna expands. And it's not just that he expands because this material world has to exist and we have to be here and that. No, that's not the reason why Krishna expands. The reason why Krishna expands was answered in a question that was once asked by a reporter to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was approached by this reporter who probably thought, okay, here's a guru, and gurus always have very deep things to say, and they reflect a lot, and if you ask them a question, you know, you can probably stump them. So this reporter was thinking like this, and he approached Prabhupada and he said, "What is the purpose of life?" And Prabhupada didn't hesitate one second. He immediately responded to this question. "The purpose of life is to enjoy." The reporter was shocked. "The purpose of life is to enjoy?" "Yes, the purpose of life is to enjoy." And this is the purpose of why Krishna expands as well. Prabhupada gives the example of a family. Father, a mother, a man and a woman, they come together in marriage and they have children. They expand for what purpose? To increase their enjoyment. To increase their enjoyment. This is the basic reason why Krishna expands both the spiritual as well as the material worlds, to facilitate his own enjoyment and the enjoyment of all those in relationship with him. In the spiritual world, Baladev, the first expansion of Krishna, expands the land, the water, the sky. Everything that's there in the spiritual world is a manifestation or an expansion of Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram expands as the Lord's clothing, as his slippers, as his crown, as his belt, as his sacred thread. All of these are expansions of Lord Balaram. And again, in the material world, Mahavishnu is there, and from Mahavishnu comes Garbhadakshay Vishnu. All the universes are coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. The whole world, the phenomenal world we see around us, is all created by expansions of Lord Balaram. So existentially, according to the Siddhanta, this is Lord Balaram. But if that's all we know of Lord Balaram, then how are we going to tell him that we love him? It's rather hard to love the mountains, the trees, the land, the water, the oceans, all these things. It's harder to love them than it is a person, because we don't really have a lot of reciprocation from those manifestations or expansions of the Lord. But if we know the Leela of Lord Balaram, then we can begin to develop our loving relationship with him. So both things are necessary. Siddhanta, or the existential truth, as well as the Leela, or the pastimes, the play, the personality of Godhead. And this is explained right from the very beginning of our Krishna consciousness. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, "Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pavartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita." Krishna says that, "I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts." Worship me with all their hearts, Krishna says. Now, can we worship Krishna with all our hearts if you are like me when I was standing on that podium in the federal courtroom with a big hole in my heart because I was so embarrassed at the awe and majesty of the federal judge? Can you, in that position, worship the Supreme Lord with all your heart? Maybe you can. For me, it's very difficult. And I think generally it's going to be difficult if we just know the majesty the awe-inspiring existence of the Supreme Lord, to worship Him with all of our hearts is going to be very difficult. But if we know Him completely, we know Him, His lila, His pastimes, His personality, then we can love Him with all of our hearts. So this is the level of love that we have to come to when we're trying to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this verse today explains what is the basis of the Lord's lila. By giving names. He's named according to His activities. Krishna has many names, as you know, thousands of names, millions of names, and they are based on His activities. He's known as Yashoda Nandana, or the son of Mother Yashoda. Giri Bhadadhari, the lifter of Govardhan Hill. All these names are associated with His activities and His devotees. And so, to know Lord Balaram, we start by knowing His names. And the particular name that is in this verse, one of them is Rama, or that He will be very pleasing to His family members and relatives. Now, there are many, many pastimes of Lord Balaram that deal with family and relatives. So we're going to talk about them a little today, because that way we'll get to know a little bit about who is this person, Balaram. Does anybody here have an older brother? Anybody? You have an older? A lot of people have older brothers. Okay. Then this should be, the first pastime should be something that you find interesting. One day, when Krishna and Balaram were just very small boys, they were playing with their friends, and they conspired together, Krishna's friends that is, conspired together to make a complaint to Mother Yashoda about Krishna. They complained to Mother Yashoda that Krishna has eaten earth. Krishna has eaten earth. Now, why is this of concern to anybody, whether Krishna ate dirt or not? Well, I can tell you why it's of concern to Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda was so much in love with her child and showering her child with motherly affection that, just try to imagine, you know, a Bengali mother, a, you know, a Jewish mother, you know, an Italian mother, the most loving mothers the world has known, if you combine them all together, they still don't come to the level of love, motherly love, that Mother Yashoda had for her baby Krishna. His every concern was her life. Now, she knew that if Krishna was eating dirt, that meant that either he was going to get very ill, or it meant that somehow or another she wasn't fulfilling her duty as a mother in giving him the nourishing food that he needed. And so she was in anxiety about her own role as a mother and fulfilling that role, as well as Krishna's safety, health, and well-being. And so when she heard that Krishna had eaten earth, she became in great anxiety. Oh, she was in great anxiety. And so she wanted to find out, is this true? And so she asked Krishna, have you eaten earth? And she said, he said, no. No, mother, I haven't eaten earth. Who told you that? If you heard that from my friends, then they're just all conspiring against me to get you to chastise me. They're having fun in that way. So Mother Yashoda needed someone to confirm whether Krishna had eaten dirt or not. And so she turned to Balaramji. Has he eaten earth? Yes, he has eaten earth. This is an older brother. Always anxious to get you in trouble. Yes, he has eaten earth. And so Mother Yashoda took Krishna in her arms and she put her fingers here, open his mouth like that, and looked in his mouth to see had he eaten earth. But what she saw, she didn't expect. She saw the entire universal form in the mouth of Krishna. She saw the planets, the ocean, the sky, the stars in outer space, the planets. She saw this earthly planet. She saw Vrindavan. And she saw Krishna sitting on her lap, all in the mouth of Krishna. She became completely bewildered by this Siddhanta, by this truth of the position of her son. She became completely bewildered by that. And as Krishna saw her become more and more bewildered, contemplating the Siddhanta, the truth of this existential existence of the Supreme Lord, he became very compassionate to her and once again covered her with yoga maya so that she could participate in the leela of being the Supreme Lord's mother. The leela of being the Supreme Lord's mother is a bhava. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. And so he covered her with this bhava so that she could once again see Krishna as her small child and care for him and love for him in a way in which was transcendentally pleasing both to her and to him. Baladev played the role here of facilitating the love of Mother Yashoda by putting Krishna in a position where he would be chastised or cared for by his mother in a very, very deep way. This is the role of Balaram, how he facilitates the family relationship between Mother Yashoda and Krishna. Now, how many of you are older brothers? Okay, so now this story is for you, if you're an older brother. Because it's a slightly different kind of relationship. See, the thing is, the Leela of the Lord is very deep with loving relationships. And we can enter deeper and deeper into the subtleties of those relationships. One instance, you have an older brother. Another instance, you are the older brother. There are two instances, particularly in Krishna's Leela in Vrindavan, where being the older brother, Balaram being the older brother, is particularly important. There's a name for being the older brother. What is it? Dauji, yes, Dauji, the older brother. Elder brother. So Krishna, Balaram is Dauji, and that has significance in two pastimes. Many pastimes, but let's just concentrate on two. One is the killing of the Agasura demon. Now, in both of these pastimes, it's significant that when Krishna and the cowherd boys went into the forest to play, Balaram did not accompany them. When they sent Krishna with the cows and the calves to play in the forest, it wasn't that they did so in a carefree manner. Out of their love and affection for their children, they also sought their safety and their protection. And who was that safety and protection that they sent them with? Dauji. We're sending them, the boys, with Dauji. He'll take care. He'll protect them. One time, Srila Prabhupada said, I believe it was after the installation of Krishna Balaram and Sri Vrindavan Dham at the ISKCON temple there. He said, now Balaramji is here, everything will be all right. Because he's the elder brother. He'll take care of us. He'll protect us. He'll guide us. And so it became particularly important in two pastimes of the Lord that Balaram did not go with the cowherd boys to the forest. And the first was when Agasur was killed. Now, I'm not going to focus so much on Agasur pastime because I want to get to the other one. But the reason why I mention Agasur first is because when the demon was killed and when it was revealed a year later, after so much intrigue, Balaramji was the one who basically discovered the confidential dealings Krishna was displaying, how he was bewildering Lord Brahma. But after it was revealed that this big demon was killed, all the residents of Vrindavan were aware that Krishna had gone to the forest, there had been some danger, and Balaram wasn't there. So that was in their mind. So later, when Krishna again went to the forest without Balaram, and again there was trouble, they immediately remembered that, oh, Balaram didn't go with Krishna. Therefore, something bad must be happening. And that bad was that Krishna had gone to the forest and he was told by his friends that there was a big snake in the Jamuna River, in a particular part of the river, and that snake had so much poison that he had poisoned all the water, and when your birds flew over it, they just dropped dead from the venom that was seeping up from the river. And they asked Krishna, can you please do something about this? So Krishna said, sure, I can do something. So he went to that spot in the Jamuna River, climbed up on a tree, tightened his belt, and dove into the river, right where all the poison was. And he was swimming around very strongly just to agitate Kaliya. But he was so beautiful that when Kaliya saw him, he recognized, oh, this is a very beautiful boy. But still, because he was angry, he pounced on Krishna, and he grabbed him, and he got him in his coils. Now, when that happened, all sorts of evil omens started to manifest in Goloka, Vrindavan. The residents began to notice, oh, something must be happening. Maybe the boys are in danger. Maybe our life and soul, Krishna, is in danger. And then they realized, what did they realize? That Balaramji didn't go to the forest. So they were mortified. They thought, oh no, this is the end. Balaram didn't go to the forest. Let me read to you a little bit of what they thought. Observing the inauspicious signs, the cowherd men, including Nanda Maharaj, became very anxious out of fear. At the same time, they were informed that Krishna had gone to the pasturing ground without his elder brother, Balaram. As soon as Nanda and Yashoda and the cowherd men heard this news, they became even more anxious. Out of their great affection for Krishna, they became unaware of the extent of his potencies, they became overwhelmed with grief and anxiety because they had nothing dearer than Krishna, and because they had dedicated their everything, life, property, mind, affection, activities to Krishna. They were so affectionate to Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan, that when they heard this news that Balaram didn't go and they saw these inauspicious signs, they knew. They thought, out of love for Krishna, they thought, Krishna must be dead. Krishna must be dead. Otherwise, why are all these inauspicious signs there? And Balaram's not with him. They were thinking that Krishna could die. Out of love, they were thinking like this. The Siddhanta of Krishna, being the ever-existing, eternal, supreme personality of Godhead, above any troubles or dangers of this material world, was completely absent from their consciousness. They were fully absorbed in Krishna's lila, understanding him to be their lovable child. They were mad with anxiety, and they ran to the place where Krishna was ensnared by Kaliya's coils. Actually, Balaram got there ahead of most of them, and he was smiling. He wasn't in anxiety at all, because he knew the position of Krishna. He knew Krishna was in no danger. But the other residents of Vrindavan, when they came, Balaram had to check them from entering into the water. Imagine Mother Yashoda hearing this news and coming running, and then getting there and seeing Krishna tightly held by these big coils of this serpent with so much poison in the air. She immediately just wanted to go into the water of the Jamuna. You can imagine her. Actually, Balaram, he checked all of the residents. I can imagine Balaram standing there. No, don't do it. You know, he's holding her from throwing herself into the water. They were so much affectionate to Krishna. And Krishna remained for 2 hours in the coils while they were there on the bank. For 2 hours, the residents of Vrindavan were just dying, contemplating their separation from Krishna. Then finally, after 2 hours, Krishna released himself, danced on the heads of Kaliya, chastised him, and drove him away from the Jamuna forever. And all of the residents got their life back. When Krishna came to shore, Balaram embraced him. Now, can you imagine what Balaram must have said to Krishna, whispered in his ear when he embraced him? He probably said something like, "You really got him going that time, didn't you?" Because that was Krishna's leela. They loved Krishna so much. How could we get them to love him more? How can we get Krishna to love him more? By putting himself in such a situation of anxiety, so their love would simply increase. Again, Balaram facilitated these pastimes both by not being present in the forest with Krishna and then restraining the residents of Vrindavan so that they could observe that leela of Krishna. So these are family relationships. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a verse that says, describes Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as Prema Mahajwali. Prema Mahajwali. The loving network of the pastimes of the Lord. That's very applicable to understanding Krishna's pastimes as well, particularly his pastimes with his family members. Because a family is like a network, and Krishna's family, you know, was huge. How many wives did Krishna have? 16,108. I probably told this story before, but I can't resist telling it again. One time we were in Chicago, and we were doing a convention. We did these conventions with Prabhupada's books, American Library Association. And so we were traveling, BBT Library Party was traveling, and we needed money from L.A. So L.A. sent money by Western Union, and I had to go pick it up. And so if you pick up money from Western Union, I don't know if they still do it, but they ask you a question, you know, a test question. So I went there to pick up the money, and the guy asked me, "How many wives does Krishna have?" What? 16,108. Here's your money. So Krishna had 16,108 queens in Dwarka, and each of those queens had 10 sons. And there were some daughters also. So his family is huge. It's like a big network. Now, if you know anything about Indian families, you know that the role of the elder brother is very, very complicated. The elder brother is involved in everything. You can't do anything without consulting the elder brother. And so that existed in Krishna's Leela also. Balaram, particularly in marriage situations, there's a lot of pastimes where Balaram is right in the middle of a marriage situation. And so Muna discussed a couple of those. And the first one is with Krishna's principal queen, Rukmini. We know that Krishna kidnapped Rukmini at Rukmini's request. But her brother, Rukmi, he had another idea. He had another plan. He was going to marry Rukmini to Shishupal. And it was all set. And again, once the elder brother makes these arrangements, you can't change them. Everyone just has to follow the dictates of the elder brother. So he made this arrangement that Rukmini was going to marry Shishupal. But Krishna came and kidnapped him and spoiled the whole thing. Rukmi was livid with anger. And so as Krishna and Rukmini were driving away, he chased them in his chariot. And finally, Krishna, seeing him coming from such a distance, he stopped. And when he stopped, he was going to fight with Rukmi. Somehow or another, he tied Rukmi up. And then he started cutting his hair off. He shaved half of his head, half of his mustache and things like that. Made him look like a fool. And then Balaram came and he said, Krishna, what have you done? Why have you treated him like this? You shouldn't treat him like that. And he chastised Krishna. You know, I'm your elder brother. I'm telling you, you've done wrong by doing this. And so then they let Rukmi go. Now, despite that introduction to your brother-in-law, Rukmi still had affection for his sister. And so when Krishna and Rukmini had their first son, Pradyumna, which is a whole other story about Pradyumna being separated from them, so you can imagine how, when they got Pradyumna back, how dear he was to them. Still, in that situation, Rukmi married his daughter to Krishna's son. And their son, Pradyumna's son, married the granddaughter of Rukmi. So there was like a close family relationship. And when this marriage of the grandchildren was taking place, all the principals of the family were together in one place. And so there were some pleasure pastimes. Rukmi, because he knew Balaram wasn't very good at playing chess, he challenged him to chess. Balaram, you play me this game of chess. So he said, yes, I'm challenged, I'm a kshatriya, yes, I'll play. So he began to play with him chess. But as I said, he wasn't very good, and so Rukmi was beating him all the time. He beat him when there was a low wager, then they increased the wager, and he beat him again, and they increased the wager, and he beat him again. He beat him three or four times like this. But Balaram, being a kshatriya, he was very determined, and he said, let's increase the wager. So finally, there was like 1,000,000 gold coins or something like that. They had to wager. And all the family members were like sitting around watching this as it was going on. Krishna was there. Rukmi had his friend, the king of Kalinga, there. And so they bet, Balaram bet 1,000,000 gold coins. And he won. He won that time. He said, see, I've won. But Rukmi didn't accept. No, no, no. There was some discrepancy. Actually, you didn't win. So Balaram said, okay, well, let's play again. So they played again. And again, Balaram won. And this time, to declare Balaram had won, there was a voice from the sky. Balaram has won fair and square. Maybe they didn't say it like that, but Balaram had won. But still, this Rukmi was such a rascal. He said, no. I don't accept that Balaram has won. And then he crossed the line. I mean, it was a family affair, and so, you know, you have to tolerate these family functions and everything like that. And so even in the transcendental realm, it seems that there was some tolerance that has to go on. But then Rukmi crossed the line, and this is what he said. He said, my dear Balaramji, you two brothers, cowherd boys only, may be very expert in tending cows, but how can you be expert in playing chess or shooting arrows on the battlefield? These are arts known well only to the princely order. So he criticized his family. And that crossed the line. Wait a minute. You don't criticize my family. You know, you're not going to get away with that. So he took up his club and he beat Rukmi and killed him. Now this other friend of Rukmi, he also was smiling and laughing during this whole thing. And so Balaram knocked his teeth out as well. But how do you think this made Krishna feel? Come on, Balaram's the older brother. What is he going to say? Well, wait a minute. This is like a family occasion, Balaram. Don't get too excited. Don't do that. Don't do anything. But he couldn't. And this is a description of what Krishna was going through. During this strife between Balaram and Rukmi, Lord Krishna did not utter a word. For he knew that if he supported Balaram, Rukmini would be unhappy. And if he said the killing of Rukmi was unjust, then Balaram would be unhappy. Therefore, Lord Krishna was silent on the death of his brother-in-law, Rukmi, on the occasion of his grandson's marriage. He did not disturb his affectionate relationship with either Balaram or Rukmini. After this, the bride and bridegroom were ceremoniously seated on a chariot, and they started for Dwarka, accompanied by the bridegroom's party. So, these family relationships are very delicate, and sometimes you have to be quiet, sometimes you have to say something. There's another instance where Balaram did have something to say in these kind of marriage dealings. And that is when Krishna's son from his wife Jambavati, he was kind of, like a bad child, naughty boy. And so the father, Duryodhana, was arranging the swayamvar of his daughter, Lakshmana. And so Lakshmana had in her mind someone already, but during the swayamvara, Samba showed up and he just kidnapped her and ran off. And so all the members of the Kuru dynasty, including Bhishma, all the big leaders of the Kurus, they were very upset that the Yadu's son, Samba, had come and done this. So they decided they're going to declare war on the Yadus. And so when the Yadus heard this, Balaram, being the elder brother, he thought, wait a minute. We've got to be able to settle this peacefully. So he decided that he would go there. And this is how it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Lord Balaram knew very well that by slight provocation people are prepared to fight with one another in the age of Kali, he did not like the idea of the two great dynasties, the Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty, would fight amongst themselves, even though they were influenced by Kali Yuga. Instead of fighting with them, he wisely thought, let me go there and see the situation, and let me try to see if the fight can be settled by mutual understanding. So Balaram had the respectful position as an elder brother in the Yadu dynasty, and he was also respected by the Kurus. So therefore, he said, let me take advantage of this position to try to go and to mediate a settlement here. But of course, again, these family things, they didn't always work out like we hoped they would. And so when he went there, again, his family was insulted. The Kurus claimed that, you're not really Kshatriyas, we're giving you all facility, and now you're like the shoes that want to come on the head of those, and it was all kinds of insults like that going on. And when Balaram heard this, he became very angry. He became very angry, and he took his plow and started to drag the whole city of Hastinapur and throw it in the river. He was so angry that they said like this. And he was a great lover of Duryodhana. But still, when his family was insulted like this, he threatened to kill their whole, annihilate their city and kill them all. And so Balaram had this delicate role to play, and it came to pass that in the battle, as the battle of Kurukshetra gathered, the war clouds gathered, he didn't want to take part. He trained Duryodhana, the chief inimical person among the Kurus. He trained him in how to fight with the club. Therefore, his name is Duryodhan Guru, Duryodhana Guru. He trained him how to fight in the club. He had a very affectionate relationship with him. So affectionate that he decided he didn't want to have anything to do with the war, and he just left. Therefore, in the Mahabharata, we don't read anything about Lord Balaram participating in the fighting that took place there in that great 18-day war at Kurukshetra. It was just something that he didn't want to be involved with. He did come back at the end, and when he saw Duryodhana with his broken legs dying on the battlefield, he became very angry. He became very angry, and he wanted to kill Bhima at that point, who had fought with him. But Krishna was able to pacify him, and Lord Balaram's anger subsided. So these are some of the family relations that Balaram manifests in his Leela, by which we can know him personally. We can know him apart from the great majestic creator of the spiritual and material worlds. We can know him as a lovable elder brother, and we can take shelter of him. When we see the deities here, we're not seeing marble, stone. We're seeing above Bhava. We're seeing the Bhava of the elder brother. Look at them. Look how Balaram is resting his arm on the shoulder of Krishna. Who can do that? You can do it to someone who's your junior. You know, okay, hold me up. That's the ecstasy of Dauji. He's all of our Dauji. He's all of our Dauji. And we should all take shelter of him, especially on days like this. Take shelter of him so that we can have that protection. We can have that entrance into our eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna by and through his mercy. But we can only do it if we know him completely. We know his majesty, but we also know him personally through his Leela, and then we can say to him that, Dauji, I love you very dearly. I depend on you so much. On this birthday of yours, please tell me what I can do to serve you. And if I can do anything to serve you, please be pleased with whatever little I can do so that you can have a very, very happy birthday. Dauji Maharaj Ki Jai. So we'll end there because we're now ready to do the snan. This is why Krishna had to stay back and didn't go to the pasturing grounds when Agasura was killed, because it was his birthday that day. And they were doing Abhishek, so many things, having him give cows in charity. And so now we can participate that in ourselves. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.